This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Doom Buchanan
and Stuart Burks,
and I am Don Esselmont. Well, Doom, welcome. You're a local man originally?
Well, originally I grew up in Fielding, actually, and on a farm on Sandon Road, which is only, we used to regard Sandon Road as almost in town, while people sort of say you're farmers. My mother would hastily say, oh yes, but we're only 3 miles out. So they may establish the point that we weren't out in the back blocks.
So was there a status thing about...
I think there was. We're talking, it's sort of 80 or 90 years ago now, and so things were different then. And of course, it was in the wartime. This is we're talking about. My main memories of that era was the Second World War, and that was huge. It was a huge effect on New Zealand and on everybody, really. And I think there was for some time, there was a great fear that the Japanese were going to invade us, and in fact, it was the Battle of Midway, really, that put an end to that. But, you know, I think sometimes people forget, you know, the effect that this had on everything.
So was that for the school children as well?
Well, I didn't remember. I remember seeing adults very concerned. I didn't really take that much notice. I thought, you know, you still act as a kiddie and that sort of thing. I used to ride a horse to school. My great-grandchildren think that must have been in the Dark Ages.
Was that common?
Oh, yeah, there were quite a lot of...
Because you had, what, about three miles, about five kilometres to go to school?
At times there was 3 miles riding a horse, both to Fielding, Manchester Street and Fielding and Mount Biggs. So it was really quite a big, significant thing. And lots of, well, not lots, but a significant number of kids, I can't remember now, but there was about half a dozen horses in the horse paddock.
So how old were you when you were riding the horse?
Well, I would have been about seven, eight. That year.
Yeah. Any incidents?
No. The horse, he seemed to remember from my brother's, which was even earlier, which was 9 years earlier, so he seemed to remember where the school was. It was a Shetland pony, actually, and quite remarkable, the places he knew where to go and where to speed up and so on. So it wasn't for him, it wasn't a big deal, or didn't seem to be.
And how long did you stay at school in Fielding?
Manchester Street, just 1 year, and that was standard. In those days, we talked about standard six, form two, isn't it? What was form two, and then Wellington College was a third former. So yeah, it was a little down on the bottom again. So that was
going to a boarding school in Wellington.
That was a boarding school, and that was very dramatically different to Mount Biggs. Yeah, it was a. You know, it's a big school, and I couldn't. They spent a lot of time drilling into us behaviour and, you know, all manner of things. I learned a lot about going to things like going to a theatre and standing up and not standing up, and rules about behaviour, which I never dreamt of until I went to.
So was it very strict, do you think?
I don't think it did any harm at all. Yes, it was quite strict, but I don't think it was a bad thing. Seeing behaviour many years later in, say, in Taupo, I do remember in Taupo people sitting with their feet on the seats in front and that sort of thing. So that in Wellington College days, they would have chucked you out. And probably been caned, because in those days they could cane people. Mm. It's absolutely not on now.
Yeah. What, was that common, physical discipline?
Yeah. Well, it happened, put it that way. No, it didn't kill anybody.
Yeah. But what would you be caned for?
All sorts of things. Whistling at girls. It's quite small things, and it wasn't a huge thing. In the boarding school part, if you were caught out of bed when you're supposed to be in bed, that was a caneable offence. And it was almost something you had to do to sort of get stripes before you went on to the next.
Oh, so a rite of passage.
A sort of rite of passage.
now, did you then, I know there was at least one school where the larrikins would put notches in their belts for the number of times they've been caned.
There were some that had that sort of, there was always somebody that had that kind of rite of passage, or had got an extra point because they'd done something or been caught doing something. It was all part of it. Collectively, there were those that felt really, I mean, there were kids that were really upset by it, but in the main we all sort of got over it and got through it, and funnily enough they still have old boys meetings even right up to the present, and they get big attendances. It's amazing, really. It's a sort of something we went through. It's a bit like being in the forces. We were in the same unit together, and do you remember old so-and-so? And we had a master who we called him the Fox. He actually was a very clever fellow, but he couldn't cope with being called the Fox, and went to no end of trouble to stop this. Who was the boy that called that name? Which was, of course, the worst possible.
Yeah.
Couldn't have done it.
Why was he called by that name?
He looked a bit like a fox. He had a long nose, and people used to shout out down a corridor, "Tally-ho!" And others, of course, took their names and just sort of got over it. People like Inky Dighton and Tibby Brody and names like this. But the Fox couldn't cope very well with the name.
So what about academic standards at the school?
They were pretty, they prided themselves on academia. So that was quite a lot of people went on to lawyers and Not all by any means, but into professional jobs.
So it was an elite school?
No, they didn't really. There were those that regarded it as elite, but the school itself didn't do that. It had a sort of down to earth sort of view about that type, that attitude. They didn't encourage that at all.
Yeah. So it's a lot of sort of farming family
people.
Well,
there were a lot of people from, because there were a lot of boys that came from Hawke's Bay and further up the Main Trunk Line. So there were quite a lot of farming people there, yeah. And again, this was wartime. And it was different, and nobody could really see what the future, I'm sure parents did, but boys, I don't ever sort of saw that as a huge deal, but it was always there in the background, totally different to today.
Yeah. Was there a sort of cadet force?
That was an abominable thing, but I managed to get into signals, which I could spend all day.
Semaphore was
Morse code. Radios.
Right, Morse code
and things like that. So we managed to get through that.
Presumably it was a fee-paying school?
Yes. I have no idea what that...
But it would have meant that you had no very poor children.
I don't think we even thought about that.
No.
Whatever that actually means.
And it meant something different in those days.
I think it would have meant something very different then, and I can't really tell you what that was like. But that said, there was nobody carrying on as if they were a sort of upper class either. I think that idea of poverty, I mean, I can remember swaggers, you know, even 3 miles.
Yeah.
And all sorts of people, including my mother, was always giving meals and things to swaggers.
Now, did they follow there was some sort of custom about stones on the gatepost, was there?
Yeah, there was. I don't know.
Okay.
I couldn't answer that. That's possible.
Yeah.
But, you know, 3 miles out of Fielding, it's not the hang of a long way. And there were lots of people. There was quite a number of them about at different times. The other thing too, of course, people used to, there were drovers, and if you could, even going into Fielding to this day, they've got sort of a little monument, well, not little, about drovers at the entrances to the town. So droving was there were men and horses and dogs were commonplace, and it was a pretty rugged sort of, there were no trucks. As we have today. I mean, again, this was wartime, so trucks were virtually non-existent. I can't remember seeing...
Because of the shortage of fuel, some would use alternative fuels or something?
Yes, there was. No, that wasn't a big thing with trucking, I don't recall. I mean, yes, people have put gas bags on the roofs of cars and that sort of thing. Then they had a converter on the built into the side of the car with coke. I used to see that sort of thing. But all, you know, there weren't the vehicles on, nowhere near the vehicles on the road.
Yeah. So what about news of the war? Was that something you get through
radio,
the radio? And
paper and radio, no television, of course.
Yeah.
Cell phones didn't exist.
No. So you would have had a party line phone, though, would you?
No, we didn't. Lots of people did. And that went on for some years after the war. But we didn't have... Well, there were people that had private lines, and ours was one. And but yes, but there were party lines.
So were you on a large farm or a small farm?
About... it was large enough. It was both cropping and... sheep and cattle and deer, small dairy unit. So it was quite a large one.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
With many workers on the farm as well?
Came and went, yeah. Okay. We had two people working, but cropping, you know, harvest times. You'd have gangs of people.
Yeah.
Traction engines. Things like that.
Were you drawn into doing all the harvest work as well?
Oh, I used to sort of assist a little bit, but generally sort of it was a playtime, because this was when I was a lot younger, really. Gradually the machinery took over, and it seemed to happen fairly quickly, actually.
And what about rationing?
Well, it was never an issue for us, because farming, you had stuff like sugar and flour and things like that. They were, and petrol and all those sort of things were rationed. But it wouldn't have been as bad as if you were living in a flat in St. Palmerston North.
Yeah.
But yes, there was rationing, and you know, but it was mainly in those things I mentioned.
Yeah. So, if you grew up sort of outside Fielding when you were young, did you go into Fielding much?
Oh yes. Mm.
And
at least once or twice a week. Yeah.
Was that sort of shopping? Or
shopping
church, or?
And just going with parents. Mm. Yeah.
For social activities as well,
and,
or
oh,
cinema.
Yes, yes, my mother was very active, and my father, but my mother in particular was very active, and RSA and ANZAC and mm-hmm. ANZAC observance. That was a huge deal when I knew about ANZAC and Fielding after the first. If we're talking about the First World War, and that was a huge event. Yeah.
In what way a huge event?
Well, ANZAC Day, the whole place turned out, and people came from miles, and it was a major event.
So what? Was it a service or a march?
Services, that was followed by a lunch.
Mm-hmm.
But the casualty. Many years later, when the work that I was doing as a hospital chaplain, the issues surrounding, I only started, I think, at that point to realise how big an effect this. This is why I'm talking about it now.
Mm.
How big an effect, and how many casualties New Zealand sustained right from the First World War and into the Second World War, and the effect this had on rural communities where just about, and you can see that again this at this point, places like Hunter and Fielding and Palmerston, but are smaller centres. I'm thinking of Hunterville, little just a small centre, very small centre, and they've got a list of names of people that were killed. It must have just about every family in the district.
Mm. Was your father a returned serviceman?
He was, yeah.
So he served in the Second
First
World War?
First World War.
Yeah. Did he talk about that at all?
He was decorated, Military Cross. He was in the machine. He used to talk about some. He talked about it somewhat, but not. They didn't. Not a huge amount.
Mm.
Yeah, they sort of shut up about it.
Yeah.
And the same again when I picked it up later, and much later, with chaplaincy work in hospitals and rest homes.
Yeah.
Guys did not talk about stuff.
Did you hear much about, say, why people chose to enlist and go overseas?
You're talking about which war?
Well, either war, really.
Well, they seemed to want to go to the First World War. It was a big deal, and you know, it was only going to last a few months. In fact, it may be over before they got there.
Yeah, over by Christmas.
So it was huge. It was a very... was a big thing to go. It was almost a rite. Talking about rites of passage, it's just about that's, you know, everybody. It must have been very difficult for anybody that had. I mean, there were those who were unfit, and I don't know what it was would have been like. I can only imagine what it would have been like as to why they weren't there. They'd almost have to explain. So there was an intense pressure.
Yeah.
But that's the First World War. Second World War was somewhat different. And in particular, it nearly came here with the Japanese thing.
Yeah. So they felt they didn't want to be sent far away.
I think there were some of the same dynamics operating when it started. But then I was still, you know, primary school. So I wasn't sort of seeing too much of it. But looking back, there was a certain amount of the same sorts of pressures, but it seemed to change. And then there was this intense fear. Then the Americans came.
Yeah.
And that turned the whole thing completely on its head.
So, meaning what? What was the reaction?
They arrived, I don't know how many of them were here, but they seemed to be everywhere. And they sort of arrived overnight. They didn't. It wasn't really overnight, but it seemed to. One day they weren't here, and then the next thing, everything changed dramatically.
Yeah. Was that exciting for you?
Sorry?
Was that exciting for you?
It was when it came to cars and vehicles and trucks and men and all these well-dressed, you know, even fielding and fielding on a sail day, which is still a big deal, swarming with Americans in uniform, and they were getting engaged to girls, and it seemed to be over the top. I don't know whether it was, but
yeah,
that's what it said. But the big thing was the relief.
Yeah,
the big thing was the fear of being invaded, because everybody had read up what the Japs had done when they took over countries and what they would have presumably have done here. So the sudden arrival of Americans was lifted, and it seemed to lift overnight.
There were a lot of Americans based down in Kapiti.
There were, yeah.
And were there lots here locally in the Manawatu?
There used to be around, but you're right, the big camp was Kapiti. Yes, that's quite right. Because we had two of them staying with us for some weeks, they were recuperating. They were too sick to be on, whatever that meant, to be on active service or to be in camp. So they appealed for people to take them in, and they were completely different. But they were too sick to be with them, but they were well enough to be out and about, and they didn't want them in camp, so they stuck them in the community.
What do you mean completely different from?
I wouldn't know how to eat a boiled egg.
Were they were from city, American cities, or
but they hadn't. They didn't know. I remember, my family, my mother giving them a boiled egg, and they didn't know how to eat it.
What were they? Were they? Do you know what part of America they were from?
At this stage, no, I can't remember. But they were civilized, but they just didn't.
Yeah, just hadn't ever come across that.
No, they didn't do that.
I think the American tradition is to scoop the egg out into a plate, isn't it?
That's what they ultimately did. Yeah. Then one of them came down with malaria, and malaria, as you probably know, you can get malaria and get over it and go about your business, and then it'll hit you again. And this guy went down and just went down just like that. And the doctor in Fielding had never seen a case of malaria in his life, so he had to get his book. There were no get on Dr. Google, goggle, look it up. And they were terrified of their... I wouldn't say terrified. They were pretty scared of what their authorities would do. Everything had to be... I mean, we had to go... Before we got a doctor to see this guy, my father had to ring somebody somewhere in Wellington to get authority. And it was a sort of an, of course, sort of thing. It was a sort of, why is that necessary? You know, it was a totally different discipline system, which seemed to be much, I mean, New Zealanders seemed to be much more relaxed. It wasn't with them. What didn't seem to be. Then they all went. They went almost as quickly as they came. And of course they were rolled, the chaps, back. But that was a huge event. We've forgotten about it now. And, you know, mention America now, and people say, oh, bloody Americans, they're all like Trump. And,
yeah, yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
So would you have said, now, there were the Polish children refugees that came
they
here?
Were and Pia too. And where were they?
Yeah.
They were Pia
yeah,
too.
I think it was Pia
too.
Yeah.
I think it was Pia. Yeah. That we knew about them, but we did not see them or anything.
Hmm. Okay.
But it was really quite a significant thing. You know, people read about it, and it was in the paper, not on television.
Yeah. And they were pleased that it happened, you think?
I don't think there was any. There was sort of polls out here, you know. Why would that be, sort of thing?
Hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think when the Scandinavians first came out, there was some puzzlement until they saw what they did. That was much earlier, of course, 1870 or whatever.
That's right.
But, so if you were you went into Fielding, did you come to Palmerston North Park?
For coming to Palmerston was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And as which was mainly for the pictures or something like and shows.
You come by car?
We had used to be the opera house in Palmerston, didn't it?
Mm.
And I can recall coming to some, by the way, the war has receded at this point.
Mm.
The magicians and shows and things which were all in the opera house in Palmerston.
Mm.
And didn't come to Fielding, but it came to Palmerston. So people, then when I developed even further and started working, coming to Palmerston to the ANA Ballroom, Army, Navy and Air Force, that's what it went, ANA Ballroom, Army, Navy and Air Force, that was a big deal, except we were disappointed in the talent.
Okay. But what about now? But you were in Wellington during your teenage years? And what was that a big change?
Yes. Well, I was at school in Wellington, so that was that was when I finally left school and started work in Fielding. That was when the teenage years sort of.
Oh, so how old were you when you left school?
I don't know what the rule was then.
You left as soon as you could, or?
The idea was parents, or my parents anyway, you had to have a trade. You can't, because a lot of boys and girls that were in my class in Fielding, Form 2, ended up working in Borthwick's Freezing Works, because that's where you got big, and you did get, I don't know what it was, but
a lot of money.
It was a lot of money. And I worked, because I went into the wool trade, and that was an outfit called the Kawa Wool Company, which were wool scourers in quite a big way in Fielding. But I was an apprentice sorter classer.
So you'd been about 14 or 15, you think?
Okay. And my salary then was nothing like what you'd get at Borthwick's. But the guys that were in, I don't know where they ended up.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.